quickly return to the conversation we were having a little bit earlier. We were asking what the Broncos can learn by looking across the street, right? I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're starting from square one. I mean, it's a rebuild, okay?
Right.
You move on from Russ. You take the 53-32, the dead cap split. You move on from Justin Simmons. We all understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we brought it up a little bit earlier about, okay, so what are the things that they can take? Obviously, different sports, and yeah, okay, well, you're going to do it your own way, but you want to look at what your neighbors just did that at least gave them some success,
mm-hmm.
especially because both of those franchises, Nuggets and Avalanche, built organically.
Yeah.
They did. So we talked about cornerstones earlier. We talked about who are your cornerstones. Who are your cornerstones for the Nuggets?
Oh, you got Murray and you got Jokic.
Easy. How about the Avs?
I put Gordon in there, too. I love Gordon.
I would say you could probably make the argument for your whole starting five, but as far as your cornerstones, your pillars, Jokic and Murray.
Okay.
Jokic and Murray. But you need a good supporting cast.
McKinnon and Carr, obviously.
Right. And Rantanen, probably.
And Rantanen.
And you could probably even make the argument that Nichushkin and Taves, guys who have locked up to 7-8 year deals.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those are probably more supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, super easy to identify. Now, let me ask you this. Who are your cornerstones for the Broncos?
Yeah, PS2.
And then you really have to struggle to come up with a second one. You could maybe make an argument for Quinn Meinerz if you wanted to.
Yeah.
My opinion.
Yeah, no. You could probably make that argument, but I'd still, I mean, at some point you still have to, like, you still have to be the best or one of the best at your position in football, one of the top three.
Absolutely.
And I would not say that right now, if you looked at Quinn Meinerz, he's on that trajectory to become one of the best, but I don't think he's there when you're talking about the best guards in football. No.
So you've got one in a sport where you got six more players on the playing surface than either the Nugs or the Avs do at one given time. And then you got a whole nother unit. We just came up with two units, one cornerstone. I mean, where's your foundation here?
Right.
Right? So I think as you look across the street, you go, okay, well, first of all, I need some guys. You know, he's him, dudes.
Right.
That's what you need here.
Yeah.
Right? And so, first of all, you got to go find those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're reaching, in my opinion at least, to try and go get a quarterback when you don't have those guys around, I think you're not really setting that guy up for success. Just my personal opinion. Now, you got to have somebody play that position. But if you're talking about over-leveraging yourself, like I heard this over the last week, just this trade proposal. Well, Broncos are going to move 2025's first and 2026's first to go up to number four with the Cardinals and draft J.J. McCarthy. To me, that is almost insane to do right now, strictly because you're going to be sitting there in 2026 and five of the last 6 years, you haven't drafted a first-round talent. How do you rebuild a team that way?
Yeah.
You need some of those dudes. Now, maybe they're not all going to hit, but you need somebody.
Right. I'm with you. Like, I have said this from the start. I'd love to see them be able to find a partner to trade back with, maybe even trade back multiple times, and accumulate good players. Because there will be good players pushed down beyond 15, 16, 17, you know, in the 20s because of what I assume is going to be a mad rush on the quarterbacks. And I had said this earlier on the program. I said it on the Stinkin' Truth podcast as well. Yeah, I would call it the brass in the pocket theory. You know, the pretenders, brass in the pocket.
Okay.
There's nobody in this draft, to me, that provides you with enough juice to be willing to give up the next two first-round draft choices to move up. And I don't care if it's Williams, Daniels, I don't care if it's May, I don't care if it's J.J. McCarthy. None of those guys, to me, is worth trading away two more first-rounders to move up to get them. I just don't buy it.
Including a pick swap this year, by the way. I mean, let's just be honest. So that means you're going to spend your first on that guy this year. I mean, okay, I don't think they're getting up into the top three. I think that's a safe assumption to make unless something unforeseen happens. But it sounds like there's going to be a bidding war between the Vikings and the Raiders as well, with the Broncos potentially to try and move up.
I don't think they're going to move up. I don't think that any of these guys they covet enough to say that's worth it. And like I said, I'd love to see them be able to find a partner to trade back in the like trade backward in the draft. Like the Steelers, they did a deal with the Steelers a couple of years ago. They went up and got Bush,
right,
a Michigan linebacker. We traded back to 20, I believe, to pick up Noah Fant. Didn't work out for us, but...
But they also got pick 52, which turned into Drew Locke, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In that deal.
Okay.
They moved back from 10 to 20.
Right, from 10 to 20.
Yeah.
So if you move back from 12 to 20, they've already worked with the Steelers before. If the Steelers want to move up and take a, you know, a Bo Nix or something there, maybe, you know, I mean, I don't know what the, or maybe that's, it's the tight end, you know, maybe it's Brock Bowers they want to move up for, whoever it is. But then I would look at the Broncos and say, if you could trade back, you could still address a cornerstone position, maybe an offensive lineman you'd get there, maybe an edge guy you'd get there, maybe another corner you'd get there, but a good football player at 20-ish, somewhere in there. And then you pick up a second rounder, and maybe that's where you go out and get a Michael Pratt, or that's where you go out and get, you know, or maybe you get another really good football player that you like, another tight end or something, and then in the third round, you take Spencer Rattler. Like, that to me is more about building your franchise and doing it, you know, doing it the way that you can take pressure off a young player. You don't even have to play him this year if you don't want to. But I just think they need, and this is why I was happy they cut Russ and why I was happy they ate that money. Not because I wanted to be nanny nanny boo boo, you know, stick your head in doo doo.
Mm.
It was because,
well, at least you didn't want to be that,
right? No, because they needed, like, let's face it, they needed to make some hard decisions. Because they haven't had the people here within the organization that had balls enough to do it.
Mm.
And, you know, when we got a dude with giant clackers, it's running the show. Now, hey, listen,
no,
man.
There's no doubt.
We'll see.
Yeah, we don't know if it's going to work.
We don't know if it's going to work. We'll see, you know, and if it doesn't work, well, you know, he'll get fired like everybody else. But,
right. But
at least he's had the wherewithal. He's seen what they have. He's got the onions to make a hard decision and say, this is what we're going to do. And that to me, like, I know there's a lot of people here in Denver that aren't sold and don't like Sean Payton and think he's an arrogant turd and all those things. And a lot of those things you think about him are 100% true. But the bottom line, you cannot deny that he's the first guy that had the balls to do it.
I love what you brought up there. And you're talking about rebuilding the right way and not slapping a Band-Aid, right? Not a temporary fix. You're not taking shortcuts. And that was the second thing that I kind of came up with when saying, what can the Broncos take as far as starting from square one? You can really go any direction you want to with this rebuild. Well, let's look at the Nuggets and the Avs. They didn't take shortcuts.
Hmm.
I mean, you just talked about the core. Jokic, Murray, draft, develop, Avs, McKinnon, Rantanen, right, and, you know, McCarr, draft, develop. Now, a lot of those guys were drafted higher in the draft, specifically for the Avs, right? Because
right. They
were bad for a while. But there were no shortcuts. And when they finally got to the core, to the point where, all right, now we just needed a few pieces to get over the hump, that's when you go out and you make your moves to add that to your already existing foundation.
Right.
And the Broncos just don't have that. So no shortcuts is a big one for me. The third one, long-term coach here.
Uh-huh.
Patrick Waugh kind of leaves the Avs high and dry. They hired Jared Bednar, first NHL gig. Well, that first year, I mean, they were the worst team in the NHL, 48 points. Who would have thought that at that moment, at the end of that season, Jared Bednar was going to be the long-term solution for the Colorado Avalanche?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't take shortcuts. They drafted and developed younger players. They took their time. They did it right. And sure, does it always work out? No. But I think if you're really trying to establish the culture like you spoke about a little bit earlier, you need a guy who's willing to be there for the long haul, don't you?
Right.
Michael Malone's the same way.
And you gotta have it, and you gotta have a dude that's not afraid to make unpopular decisions.
Right.
Cutting Justin Simmons was an unpopular decision. You know what though? Sean Payton read the market. And I haven't talked to you about this. I talked to Mike about this. This is the Vic Fangio effect. A couple of years ago, I was talking to Kyle Shanahan, and he said Vic Fangio changed the kind of the tenor of football with the style of defense that he plays. And so they're going to play that shell defense where, you know, they're going to make you throw the ball underneath, rally up, tackle, see if you can put 8, 10, 12 plays together to score. And in the red zone, you know, it's really becomes tighter because now you've got a 12th defender, which is the end line, right? So now it really becomes a much tighter system, and we're going to make you kick field goals. And at the end of the day, if we keep you from scoring touchdowns and we give up yardage, we'll give up yardage, but not scores. We're giving up field goal and field goal attempts. We're going to win a lot of games. And so everybody ended up going this direction where initially where the safety created so much, there was so much value at the safety position. Like nickel guys were like, I don't want to play nickel anymore. I want to go somewhere and play safety because I'll get paid a lot more playing safety. And so what really happened was everybody mimicked the Seattle Seahawks Legion of Boom, and that was have a Cam Chancellor that's running down and just tearing people's heads off, right? He's just the rat coming down in there and playing that, you know, playing that cover one or playing that three buzz or whatever they're going to play. And he's that guy that becomes the eighth defender in the box, and he's the guy that's robbing crossing routes and knocking dudes out. And then we've got to have a middle of the field eraser at the safety position. They had Earl Thomas. And so then that Earl Thomas guy became the highest paid like player on defense, essentially, or one of them, because he could erase the mistakes that the defense, you know, the secondary would make. And then everybody started getting paid to play that position. Well, look what's happened to the safety position. All of a sudden, you get a guy like Kevin Byard, who's making $15 million a year and, you know, a multiple to all-pro, you know, safety, that all of a sudden signed a two-year deal in Chicago because he got released and he's making $7 million a year or $7.5 million a year. Like, it's gone down. So Sean made a tough decision to say, dude, this is the market. I'm not going to pay you $15 million a year. We think you're great. But nobody's going to pay you $15 million a year anymore because it's not the way we play defense in this league anymore. And it, like, everybody has to come to grips with that, including Justin.
Right. And when we were talking about what the Broncos needed in their next coach, we talked about an adult in the room, right? We talked about a guy with vision. Well, that's who Sean is. Now, I don't know if it's going to work, like you said, but I do know one thing. After 1 year of experiencing Sean Payton as the head coach, it sure as hell won't work if it's not his way. Right? If it's not his way, it's not going to work, which is why whoever was hired needed to be able to see what you could get out of Russ at the very most. And if that didn't work, turn and burn and be willing to wear the hat of a rebuild and be here for the long haul, because we knew that this was a house built on shifting sands. Mm-hmm. It was most likely not going to work out when Sean came here with Russ. Yeah. Now, he got the most out of Russ that he probably possibly could have, but we knew that long term there was no viability. So now, is Sean the guy that can draft and develop, grow organically, instill a culture, uphold an expectation that eventually your cornerstone players come into the locker room and go, I see your expectation, now let me set the tone of how we're going to do things. Jokic does that and McKinnon does that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. You got to have those players. And I think one of the cool things that's happened this offseason is look how many former Saints have signed here that want to play for Sean Payton.
Mm-hmm.
And it does say something about the way the guy runs his program. And I will tell you, man, he holds his guys accountable. There is no question.
Sure.
And he can be a hard ass. There's no question. But I've been around him enough to know he really loves his players, and he tries to take care. Like, he does a great job of taking care of players and making sure that everything they do is about supporting and helping grow the players and making things as comfortable as possible on the players. He always does. He does it. You got to be able to accept hard coaching, and you screw up and he's going to be in your ass. Mm-hmm. That's the way he coaches. And so, but there is something to be said for all those guys that played formerly with New Orleans. They have, you know, the Roaches of the world, the Troutmans of the world, the
Throckmortons.
Yeah, Throckmortons. And like all those guys that say, I want to play for him.
Well, it seems like they're bringing in more culture fits, but you still need the cornerstone pieces to build around. You could bring in whoever. I mean, you could bring in the whole Saints team from, you know, the Super Bowl here. It doesn't matter unless you have the dudes.
Yeah.
And so they don't have those. So I think cornerstones, no shortcuts to success, really, in a true rebuild. Long-term coach, and the last one for me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, speaking of the trade thing, somebody just reached out to me. And with the Steelers I had mentioned, the Steelers need to rebuild their offensive line.
Sure.
If enough quarterbacks go early, they would be motivated to move up to 12 because this is a draft where there's five or six first-round offensive tackles, and there's some guys that can really play.
And God knows Russ needs an O-line.
Right.
I mean, we learned that one here.
But that could be something that they are motivated to move up to 12 to go get. If there's a run on quarterbacks that go five or six deep,
there will be suitors. There will be trade partners if the Broncos want to move down. I have no doubt. Indianapolis at 15 has been talked about as somebody who's maybe looking to move up. Maybe a Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, the corner. The last one I want to get to here real quickly. Front office alignment and vision. We think about the Nuggets, right? Masai Ujiri, he leaves. Conley takes over. Malone is at the helm. Mm-hmm. And Josh Kroenke, right? You kind of have that three dots in a row. You have the symmetry. You look at the Avalanche. Well, after Pierre Lacroix, I mean, for all intents and purposes, they handed the reins to Sakic, right? I mean, there were other people involved, but Kroenke, Sakic, and then when Sakic moved on, it was McFarland. You have everybody, and you have Bednar hired by, right, and a part of that culture. And when I look at the Broncos, I mean, public speculation is that this may be the end of George Payton. I don't know. It seems to me like if Sean and George didn't get along, George would already be gone. I mean, feels like Sean probably said, look, George, this isn't working. But it seems like it's probably working. Yeah.
Well, I think what's ended up happening, one, is you take all the, like, people want George Payton fired.
Mm-hmm.
George Payton came here and had to do something he wasn't hired to do. He came here as a general manager. He had to become the grand poobah of all things football, Denver. Right. That wasn't his job. He became the GM, the president of operations, the guy that was... I mean, he had press conferences constantly. That wasn't what he was hired to do. But he had to take over for the trust, and he had to take over, you know, hiring coaches and you know, and signing a quarterback and all that stuff. So to me, now he's back in the lane that he was hired to be in, and now you've got a guy in Sean Payton that says, "This is what I like at this position, and this is what I want you to scout." So automatically, for a guy like, George Payton, automatically what ends up happening is now you have parameters. So now you're not casting out a huge, like, you're not just casting out this giant net and seeing what you can pull in. Now you're fishing in spots,
right?
You're saying, oh man, there's a big catfish over there underneath that log, right? I'm going to go get that. And you're just casting in certain spots. So it narrows your focus as an organization because your coach has a certain player that fits what he wants at a certain position. You know, I look at teams that do this well. San Francisco, I don't care who comes out and plays linebacker for them, they all play a similar style to Fred Warner. They're all cut from the same cloth. They're all about the same height, the same weight, the same speed ratio. There's a template for what we want at that position. And they eliminate everybody that doesn't fit the template. So they've eliminated, you know, half the people that you could possibly draft. So I think it helps them not make as many mistakes. Did they make one with Trey Lance? Yeah, but at least they ripped the Band-Aid right off and said, that was a mistake, we move on. And so I think that aspect of this organization... Now, I'm with you. Maybe they fire him right after. Maybe Sean's got somebody from New Orleans that he really likes. I don't know. But at this point, at least there is a strategy and there's a type of player that Sean Payton and his staff like for every position. And that's what they're going to address. And that's where you have you're always going to have busts. You're always going to have players that didn't pan out. You're always going to have players that don't meet your expectations. But the process is, can I eliminate a percentage of those, where everybody else is at about, you know, a 40% rate or a 50% rate or a 30% rate, can we get down to 20% failure rate? Can we do that based upon the parameters that we set? And I think that's the key to being really good at organizational structure and developing players.
So when we look at this rebuild that they're really just entering now, right? I mean, if you go up and you move a bunch of future assets, you're already dealing with the dead cap. You're kind of jumping with ankle weights. How do you preach patience
in doing things the right way to a fan base that A, is very impatient in the first place, B, has a very high standard because of the success the organization has had, and deservedly so, but also there's no way out if you don't go through. Like, you've got to honor part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I hear from a lot of Broncos fans, no, you got to have Nix, you got to have McCarthy, move up, it starts with the quarterback. I understand that you probably never actually really get your oar in the water until you get that guy. But my question is, are you launching the boat, right, from the parking lot, or are you launching the boat from the pond? Is kind of where I'm at right now. Because, okay, yeah, let's go get the quarterback, but I got nothing to support him. Kind of like Bryce Young in Carolina reminds me of. Look at that offensive line. Kid got killed this year, has almost no support. Now he's onto his second coach in year two already. Was that setting him up for success?
Yeah. It'll be his third coach because...
Right, that's valid.
Right.
That's
third
valid.
Coach because...
They have an interim.
Yeah.
Because they fired Frank Reich mid-year.
Yep.
But the point I'm trying to make here is I believe the Broncos are embarking on a rebuild. We heard from the owners' meetings at George Payton and Greg Penner. This may take some time. We even heard George Payton say the phrase, well, you can't always force something. But then we heard Sean Payton kind of clap back at Ian Rapoport for his bogus reporting. No, we definitely have the assets to move up if we want to. We can do that. So do you think there's mixed messaging here between everybody? Because I think the common narrative is that Sean is only going to be here for a short period of time. He's, you know, in his 60s. He doesn't want to go through a rebuild. He's impatient. He's going to want his guy. But to me, it seems like if we go and look at this criteria, cornerstones, no shortcuts, long-term coach, that feels like, to me, it contradicts. It's not the way to go about a rebuild the right way.
Yeah, no, I think that, one, I think he's in it for the long haul. And I think he was serious when he has said, you know, I want to be the first coach ever to win Super Bowls with different organizations. And so he understands the work that's involved. Now, what he thought he was getting into and what he actually got into, did you think there was more talent than there actually was? And I think there is, I don't have...
He had to have felt that way.
...inside information, but I'm sure, based upon some of the decisions that he's made and based upon what I know the Broncos were before he got here, I'm sure he thought they were a lot more talented than they actually are.
Well, we heard it from the interview with Jarrett Bell.
Yeah.
Where he called Nathaniel Hackett the worst coach of all time, and he said he'd be pissed off if this team didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, he did. He admitted as much.
Yeah.
So now the point is, well, now you've seen that it doesn't look as pretty on the inside as it did from the MLS listing. Are you willing to go through the process to honor it the right way and rebuild this thing up? So now you actually have something that you can be proud of.
Right.
Something that's going to work. Something that you can sell. We'll find out. Matt Smith in for Mike Evans alongside Mark Schlereth on the other side. Nuggets in action last night. Bit of a heartbreaker. We'll get to you some of your reaction on the text line. It is, of course, an Is It Just Me Friday. And it's home opener. Let's play ball. I mean, this is going to be so bad tomorrow, the weather. Can't we just sneak in two of these things? Maybe even three. Can they start now? Can they start now?
Just like go Little League on them. Seven inning, couple seven innings games. Let's roll.
How many of those do you think they win?
I think the Rays...
Seven inning games? Does it give them a better chance to win? The 1-6 Rockets?
No, I don't think so.
All right, it's Denver Sports Station, 104 through the Fan.
With an advanced network, cybersecurity solutions, and trusted partnership, Comcast Business powers more businesses than anyone. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Get started with internet and security for your small business for $49.99 a month for 12 months with a 2-year contract. Plus, ask how to get up to an $800 prepaid card with qualifying internet. Call today. Ends 5/5/24. Restrictions apply. New customers only with 50 megabits per second internet and security edge. Eco bill and auto pay required. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Oh, happy home opener. It's the day itself is a joyous occasion to celebrate. It's 75 degrees today. I mean, you can't ask for better weather.
Although it's kind of cloudy, right?
It'll burn off.
It'll burn off? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that how it always goes? By the way, Matt Smith in for Mike Evans. Isn't that the way it always goes? Opening day typically is gorgeous, and then game two of the series is miserable?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, that's about how it's going to go the next 2 days. I mean, today, high near 77. You got some winds about 20, 25 mile an hour this afternoon. And then tomorrow, It looks like around 10 a.m., 42 degrees, windy, 20-mile-an-hour winds, 60% chance of precipitation. It's going to be miserable tomorrow.
It's kind of like the last game of the Chicago series. It was raining the whole time.
Yeah, it's just the whole Chicago series was miserable. A quick check here, because one of the bigger stories is that opening day is not even close to sold out. Wow. I mean, not even close. Not even close. Tickets right now, cheapest, $58 in the door before taxes and fees. I'm seeing on some of these resale sites. But this is not what a typical opening day seat map looks like. What is that to tell us about where fans feel the Rockies are at?
Well, I mean, one, that they're not playing good baseball. Two, that there's not a ton of interest in Tampa Bay.
Mm. That's because, true. They don't draw.
Because let me just tell you, if it was the Cubbies,
yeah, it'd be packed.
If it was the opposite way around, so if the Cubs would have come here for a three-game set right after they opened in Arizona with a four-game set, and they would have opened up that next day with the Cubbies, I guarantee you, even with it being colder, would have been a sold-out crowd. And they would have been serving old style and everything else like they always mm-hmm. do when the Cubbies come to town. So, yeah, but the Tampa Bay Rays, come on.
Good baseball team.
Really good baseball team, but they're ultimately a feeder for the Yankees. And
sure.
Right? I mean, sure. They're like, you guys go ahead and develop the players. Then we'll take them once they become really good.
How about this one from Jack on the Ramoslaw.com text line? Chris Iron Man Bryant is the only cornerstone for the Rockies. Buddy, if he is a cornerstone, I mean, that is a crumbling pillar
Do the Rockies have a cornerstone?
They just signed,
The ballpark. Yeah, they just signed Tovar. Is there anybody on this roster that you would look at and say, this is a dude that you're going to build around that has the potential to be Hall of Fame?
That's a big matzo ball, Hall of Fame.
Okay, but just an all-star. Like,
don't they have to have one all-star?
They have to have, yes, they're going to have to. Who?
Would you make the argument? I can't. I mean, you could project that maybe Tovar one day. You could project maybe nobody else. I don't know what to tell you. They paid Freeland like he was going to be a part of the core. He's been terrible the first two starts. Marquez can't stay healthy. Senzatella, the same thing. Nolan Jones, I mean, he can't make a play in the outfield to save his life. Four, because he had two on one play. Four of the worst errors I've seen through like the opening week of the season from a young prospect.
That was not good.
That was brutal. So if you're going out there today.
When he came charging up on that, it went under his glove and it went all the way back to the ivy.
That's the worst feeling as an outfielder, too. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. And you're like, oh, and nobody else is close. Like, the center fielder didn't back you up. So, you just got to run. It's like the walk of shame.
Oh, yeah.
Just the total walk of shame.
Well, and then he missed the cutoff. Yeah. And that's when you double down. And now we got a snowball fight out there. Yeah. And the Cubs, swept the Rockies. Rockies cornerstone. How about Dinger?
Dinger.
Is he a cornerstone? No, I don't think so. I do want to talk about the Nuggets and the Avalanche. Nuggets last night. 102-100, they lost. They're a half game back of first in the West. And even though they lost, there was somebody that didn't stick around to see the losing effort.
Michael Malone is teed up, red-faced, and hocking at Josh Tibbin.
He thought that Michael Porter Jr. got fouled on that three-point attempt.
And by Zubac. That's technical number two, and he's out. Two quick ones. There was no way he was walking off that floor without getting caught.
Yeah, he's going to get his money's worth right now.
That is an impressive tech-to-tech time. Yeah. I mean, if you had the stopwatch, that's like 5 seconds. Son of a bang! Yeah. Son of a boom!
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
That's like when you give up a goal, and mm-hmm. then the opening face-off, and they're still reading, like, the goal by so-and-so, assist by so-and-so, and then boom.
Then the horn hits again. Yeah.
And 5 seconds later or 8 seconds later, you score, the opposite team scores. That's what that was like.
Well, the Nuggets lost by two, despite getting 9 points, only 9 points from their bench. Now, in the first half, mind you, the bench got outscored 21-0. The bench that we've all been talking about for a while.
By the way, that was absolutely brutal. After that first period where they were up, 31-20?
31-20 after the first quarter. They got outscored 33-18 in the second quarter.
When they came back out and erased the 11-point lead, like, it was like, I mean, it just happened, like, all, it was
I was right, like that.
4
yeah.
minutes in.
And 100%.
It was like, and you're like, dude, what are we, like, we don't have one dude. I mean, it's like a bricklayer's convention. We don't have one dude that can shoot a ball. What are we doing?
Well, we always talk about the Jokic minutes and the non-Jokic minutes. When he was on the court in the first half, 45 points, the Nuggets shot 19 of 38 from the field, 7 of 19 from 3. When he was on the bench in the first half, the little that he was, 4 points, 2 of 8 from the floor. Now, this is interesting because Michael Malone was adamant that he does not want to push health to chase the number one seed. So Jamal Murray hasn't played in 7 games, although Malone said before the game last night, if he had to, he probably could have. Now, clearly, there's probably got to be some concern here about Jamal Murray having missed almost 10 games now, right? But at the same time, I mean, Jokic played 40 minutes last night. Yeah. He had 36, 17, and 10. He was brilliant, as always.
Mm-hmm.
But are you worried at all about him being kind of leaned on a little too much here down the stretch?
The dude wrestles bears at Circus Club. Like, he's
an animal. He's just an absolute animal.
Dude, he just beats people up in the paint. He is just so physical. And obviously, he's incredibly skilled. And I think you get lost in the skill and you don't recognize just what a beatdown he puts on people. I mean, who's the cat that plays center? He's a big dude.
Zubac.
Yeah, Zubac. He's a big dude, and Jokic just manhandles people. And then he's to be that physical and be able to manhandle and shoulder people like that, and then just to be able to hit the little fadeaway and just silky smooth touch.
Total package. That's why he's about to win his third MVP.
It's incredible.
And also, we're going to have to get to some of this audio, I think, a little later. I hate to even play it because I don't even want to give these guys any breath or any acknowledgement. Gilbert Arenas saying he's the weakest MVP winner in the last 40 years.
Uh-huh.
Shaq last night in the TNT studio before the game saying he doesn't play any defense. I'm just so tired of this crap. Brandon Jennings. You remember Brandon Jennings? Lefty point guard. Played for the Milwaukee Bucks. Sure. Had like 50 in a game once. Brandon Jennings on a podcast said yesterday that Jokic is not him. The Nuggets are just a good team. But he's not
That's
a dude.
Ignorant.
Right.
That's what he said. He goes, no, he's not him. The Nuggets are just a great team, and we don't want to watch a great team. We want a great player. Dude, there is no faster way to tell all of us that you actually don't watch the games than by opening your mouth and saying some dumb crap like that. Are you kidding me? He's not him?
Right.
Are you kidding?
Come on, man.
I mean, he's about to be a 3-time MVP and should be 4 straight. So please, get out of here with that. I've got no time for the bad Jokic takes. And we're coming down the home stretch. He's about to win his third MVP. They're all coming out of the woodwork now. But you go look at the odds. He's still, I mean, just a mile ahead of everybody.
Right.
This thing's in the bag.
Yeah.
It's in the bag. Why are people trying to tear him down?
Because they don't like it. I mean, the bottom line is, and I said this, I said this several years ago when people looked at me like I was, and they criticized me for this. He doesn't put up SportsCenter highlights. Therefore, in today's SportsCenter highlight culture, he doesn't resonate with people.
Mm.
And unless you can appreciate the sweetness of the game and all the different things that he does, if all you can see is athleticism, if you're that shallow a fan or that shallow an analyst that all you can see is athleticism, because athleticism, that's like these pro days. Athleticism is easy. Are you a player? That's hard. And for guys who can't get over the fact that he doesn't display great athleticism,
I mean,
that's just ignorant. He's unbelievably gifted, and he's worked himself into being a great, great player.
He is him. We missed him on 2 deep balls.
He is him. There's no question. Yeah. He's a dude. We're watching Jokic, and we're watching the team. You can get bet Gilbert Arenas and Brandon
That's
Jennings.
No cap.
Matt Smith in for Mike Evans alongside Mark Schlereth. When we come back, Is It Just Me Friday on the RamosLaw.com text line. It's Rocky's home opener. We want to hear your Is It Just Me's. The Broncos, they have signed a free agent. We'll tell you who next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
We'll be right back.
I love this one. Matt Smith in for Mike Evans. How about this one? Why always complain about the Rockies? Look, without good ownership, players or coaches, what do they have?
They have a good stadium.
There you go. Why complain? That's why. Because, you know,
man,
at some point people like to see competitive teams and teams have a chance.
Man, I'm such a baseball fan that, Bud Black is a friend. I really like Bud Black. I think he's a good manager. And I'm not down on the guys from the standpoint of, yeah, we give Chris Bryant a lot of grief, but it just is, like this, I think this could just be such a jewel. Like Colorado could be, because there's a lot of transient people like you. Chicago, you know, grew up a Cub fan.
Call me a vagrant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay.
You're a squatter.
Yeah.
But there's so many great baseball fans here. And, I don't know, it just is, it was cool. I went to one of the World Series games when the Rockies were in the World Series.
When they got swept, sure.
Yeah. But I was, like, that whole Rocktober thing and, you know, back in the day when I first got here as a free agent to play for the Broncos, and they had Bichette and Larry Walker and Andres Galarraga, and they had Vinny Castilla, and they were Ellis Burks. I mean, on and on it goes. Dude, they were awesome. They were so much fun to watch, and they may lose, but they're losing, you know, 15-14. In just a smash mouth affair. It was fun and they were exciting, you know, and they were fighting for wild card bursts and everything else. They're 1-6 and going absolutely nowhere. And I don't know, it's sad. I'd like to see them be good.
Hey, Matt, in case you guys forgot, the Avs played last night too. We did not forget.
We talked about it.
We did not forget, and it's time to light the lamp, brought to you by Papa Murphy's. The Avs with a 5-2 win last night over the Minnesota Wild. Look, this is an interesting stretch of the season. I think we watched the Nuggets game last night. We've watched about the last week or so. To me, that screams like a team that is ready for playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That at this stage, it is enough with the regular season. Let's just get this thing to the postseason already, and we can start to dial it back up. For the Avalanche, I don't see the same luxury. You have so many new additions here, and truthfully, Val, once you had that big winning streak after the trade deadline, mm-hmm. Val got hurt. I mean, things have not been fantastic since then. You lost to Montreal, one of the worst teams in the league. You lost to Columbus, one of the worst teams in the league.
Correct.
A couple of days off, you bounce back with a win against Minnesota. Look good to see, but they got outshot 46-36. They got outshot in the second period 18-6. I am not as bullish on the Avalanche right now as I am on the Nuggets right now. I don't even think it's close.
Let me throw something at you. I understand the value of Jokic, and I understand the value of, you know, what he does, what he presents, the way he can score in the paint, the way he can distribute. You know, and if you decide to double team him, he'll make the right play, he'll make the right pass, you know, he'll create the assist, all those things. Okay, so I understand that. And I understand the kind of plus minus when he's on the, you mentioned the numbers, you know, they scored 45 when he was on, and they scored, what, 4 when he was off, like, in the first half. I mean, it's ridiculous, the discrepancy there. Okay, so, but I understand that because mm-hmm. I understand how good Jokic is. He's an MVP. I don't understand why they struggle so much when Val's not on the ice.
It's a good question.
What is it about Val? Because if you look at the two, they're similar from the standpoint of with Val, without Val, with Jokic on the court, without Jokic on the court. What is it about Val that creates this winning percentage and this advantage they have when he's on the ice?
What are Val's best strengths to you?
Size and the fact that he'll muck it up in front of the goaltender. He is a pillar, and you're not pushing him out. So he's got great hands, so he can tip pucks. He does all that stuff. But I think he's just physicality, and he screens goalies.
Right.
And he creates opportunities for others.
I think that's part of it. He's also the Russian bear on the forecheck. Like, he'll come get after you on the forecheck. Mm-hmm. He plays in every situation. He plays in the power play. He plays in the penalty kill. He plays the most important moments of the game.
And for the Avalanche right now, first of all, Val's a bit of a unicorn. You don't really see power forwards like that too often across the league. Certainly, if you do, they don't have the skill that he possesses, which is why they made it such a high priority to bring him back. The Avalanche all year, for the most part, Mark, have been a one-man wrecking crew, a one-line team. Mm-hmm. Nathan MacKinnon has been driving offense, okay? Well, with Nichushkin either playing on the first line or playing on the second line, that now unlocks some versatility. Well, now I can put Jonathan Drouin, who, by the way, 48 points in his last 56 games. You want to talk about low risk, high reward, and hitting it out of the park? They knocked that one out of the park. He has essentially revived his career with Nathan MacKinnon. But it allows you more versatility within your top six. It allows you another animal that you can put out there at any point in time. And the truth is, without Landeskog in the lineup, the Avs really don't have a dynamic second line. Mm-hmm. So when you're able to drop Jonathan Drouin down there, or you're able to even put Nichushkin down there, hell, what does Nichushkin allow you the ability to do? He allows you the ability to break up MacKinnon and Rantanen if you really want, and put Mittelstadt now with Rantanen and Lehkonen if you wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What he does is he basically unlocks everything. And truthfully, Mark, when we look back to the Cup team with Kadri and Landeskog, I mean, it was Kadri, Landeskog, and Lehkonen or Nichushkin on the second line. That's a dynamic second line full of really good players. Well, Mittelstadt is a good passer, but he's a younger kid.
Right.
And he just doesn't drive enough pressure. He doesn't drive enough offense. He's not necessarily at the top of the scouting report where Nichushkin would be around. It'd be MacKinnon, Rantanen, Makar, in whatever order, and then Nichushkin, bottom line. He's that dynamic. So when he's not out there, you lose an entire line that you can't send in waves. Now, should the Avs be as different without him on the ice? No, they still have plenty of talent, and I think they need to figure that out. But truthfully, he's just a guy that's irreplaceable because of all the things he does. Rantanen's a big guy.
Right.
Is he getting greasy with it? Sometimes, but not often. That's not his calling card. MacKinnon?
The way you talked, you just gave me an idea. New nickname.
Okay.
For Val. What does Val go by? What is this? Chewy?
Choo-choo, yeah. The train, the choo-choo train, the Russian bear, whatever you want to call him.
The skeleton key.
The skeleton key.
He unlocks every lock.
The skeleton key.
He's
the skeleton key.
Every lock, he unlocks it.
That is a good nickname. The skeleton key.
Right?
I agree. It's a master key.
It's a master key, right? He's the skeleton key.
It's just different when he's out there.
Because you can put him anywhere you need him, and he makes every person that he plays with, every line that he plays on, better.
Are you bullish on them heading into the postseason?
I'm bullish if Val is healthy. I'm bullish on the moves they made because I see all these guys, Mittelstadt, Walker, guys that are having an impact where I think they needed it. And then, obviously, when you got Lehkonen and you've got Rantanen and you've got MacKinnon and you've got Makar and you've got, like, they've got, talent-wise, they can play talent-wise with anybody. And I think Val and some of those guys bring some grittiness that they can also play that. That was the thing that always impressed me about the Cup run, is that I always felt like whatever style
mm-hmm.
you want to play, we can play that with you. And I've always gone back to, you know, there's some football teams, like the Eagles, when they made their run to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, I was like, how do you want us to beat you? You want us to finesse you? Because we can do that. Oh, you want us to bludgeon you? We can do that too.
Baskin-Robbins, 32 flavors,
right.
However
you want. And the great teams have an ability or have enough identity in different things that they can do whatever mm-hmm. they want. Like when we won back-to-back championships, like the people who thought, because we were quote-unquote West Coast, and at the time West Coast had this connotation of finesse.
Sure.
Right? We're just precision passing game and all that stuff. And we used to love the teams that thought we were finesse. I just remember Mike Shanahan being offended playing too high safety against us. You know, and he'd just be like, forget these guys.
Mm.
We will run them out of, you know, like run them out of the gym. Like, we'll just bludgeon them to death. The audacity to think that you can play us that you think we're finesse, and we would just go out and just try to absolutely thunder punch people. And like, it was offensive. And then we go, oh, okay, now you're going to get into, now you're going to give it access to the outside. Well, now we're going to kill you in the passing game.
You just said identity. I love that. What's the Avs' identity? Fast, relentless, physical. Val is, to use your word, the skeleton key to their identity. When he's on the ice, it's overwhelming. And right now, hopefully the Avs get him back tonight, as is expected in Edmonton, because they're going to need him. I mean, Edmonton didn't play last night. So make no mistake, the Avs are going to need him tonight. That's a 7 o'clock puck drop for the Avs and the Oilers. We will get back to more of your reaction on the RamosLaw.com text line. Matt Smith in for Mike Evans alongside Mark Schlereth.